SWAT cars. General Motors and their dealer organization throughout Southern Africa proudly bring you the drama, the danger, the thrills, and the facts when the long arm of the law travels in squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Thursday, June the 7th, 6:42 p.m. Car headlights throw beams of illumination on the Heidelberg Road leading out of Johannesburg. The traffic is moderately light. The heavy rush hour traffic has thinned, and the cinema crowds have not yet begun. One car, moving slowly, approaches a belt of trees at the side of the road.
We're coming to the side road now, Johnny. About 50 yards up on the left.
It's all right. I remember it.
Things look different tonight. I didn't want you to go past the tunnel. Better slow down, Johnny.
There it is. Just the way I remember it. You were worrying for nothing, Martin.
Well, I wasn't worried. I just want everything to go off the way we planned it, that's all.
So why shouldn't everything work out that way?
No reason. I hope your car's all right. It'd be lovely if we found somebody to swipe the wheels or something.
It'll be all right. It's too out of the way out here to worry about something like that. Car thieves work in towns, not out in the country. Ah, there it is, up ahead. It looks all right to me, just where we left it.
Good. So far, everything's gone off well, where I like things to go. Tidily and neatly. There's too little order in life today, you know? Everything's messy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, here we are.
Yes, here indeed we are. Yeah, it's the end of the line. Feels peculiarly empty. I expected something different.
It's not too late to change your mind, you know.
I am aware of that, but I have no intention of changing my mind. The gun's in the cubbyhole, Johnny. Take it out.
.45. Sure, big enough.
I swear there'll be no mistake. It'll only need one shot. I took that very much into account. Well, are you ready, Johnny?
Yes, I'm ready. Look, Martin, I mean, are you sure about this? It's what you really want.
Don't be ridiculous. I planned this entire thing out of the last detail. Of course it's what I want.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, that's all.
All right, Johnny. Go ahead. Kill me.
Take a holiday in your Chevrolet. South Africa is asking you to call. Drive a Chevrolet, the car that stops today, through the land we love by far the best of all. On the open road or where the traffic's heavy, performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So why not take a ride, see the countryside, see it in your Chevrolet.
1970 Chevrolet. It's your most powerful reason for going automatic. Bigger big sixes. Vivid new V8 power. Consider yourself spoiled by new power on the grand scale. Consider yourself promoted to executive suite luxury. Chevrolet Constantia and Commando for 1970. Consider yourself. Chevrolet does.
So why not take a ride? See the countryside. See it in your Chevrolet.
Friday, June the 8th, 9:20 a.m. Patrol van number 87 has just left a mine compound a few miles outside Johannesburg. At the wheel is Constable Balthazar von Fuhren. Beside him sits Sergeant Nico Barnard. They've been investigating a report of theft at the South Machales Drift mine. Now the patrol van heads back towards Johannesburg.
That's us a bright start of the day, Sergeant. We must have questioned at least 50 of them.
53 exactly. None of them knows a thing about any thefts. Yeah, there's a couple of them who are lying. We'll sort out everything once we get those statements in detail.
How do you know they were lying?
I've been on the force for 16 years, Constable. You develop a nose for things like that.
Control to van 87. Control to van 87. State your position, 87. Over.
87 to control. 87 to control. We are proceeding north on Durban Road. Over.
We've received a report from a farmer out on the Heidelberg Road. One of his workers has found a car parked on a side road with the body of a man in it. The car registration tallies with that belonging to a man reported missing late last night. The farm is 11 miles past Turfantine Racecourse. The farmer will be waiting at the turnoff. Investigate and report. Over.
Message received and understood, Control. Over and out. You heard the man, Constable. The next break in the center island, turn round and head back the way we've come. I don't like the sound of this. I don't like it at all.
The patrol van reaches the turnoff to the side road in a little under 20 minutes and finds the farmer waiting for him. He points up the dirt-surfaced side road to where a car is parked under some trees. Then he gets into the van and drives with the policeman up to the car.
What are all those people doing up there?
Well, you know how it is. When something like this happens, the word gets around fast. They all come along to have a look at the car. But don't worry, I left three of the farmhands there to keep the others back. They won't let anyone get near the car.
Good thinking, Mr. Niemont. The fewer people around, the more chances there are of finding some clues. You've no idea how often people stomp around and wipe out all the footprints. Pick up valuable evidence to keep as souvenirs. All right, Constable, pull up here. We'll walk the rest of the way.
Right, John.
Just stay here, please, Mr. Niemont. We'll take a look around.
All right, I understand.
It's a Bounceput 120S, German car, and a new one.
Yeah, expensive. Check the number, Constable. And walk on the grass, will you? There might be some footprints in the dust over there. The murder and robbery boys won't be too happy if they found our footprints all over the others.
Hey, hang on. Take a look down there. Another car's been parked at the side of the road. You can see the wheel marks pulling out onto the road itself.
Yeah. The tread's nice and clear. Yeah, well, let's hope a wind doesn't come up and blow away all those tracks. Now, let's have a look at this car.
Rear door's locked. Front door's both unlocked. How does it look to you, Sergeant?
Dead. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You better check all the same. Plenty of blood in here. And an entrance wound in the right temple. I can't see the other side of his head, but it'll be a mess. Looks like a pretty large caliber gun was used. No pulse. Body's cold. The rigor mortis has already set in. He's been dead a long time. All right, Constable. I'll stay here and make sure everybody keeps out of the way. And go back to Mr. Niemont and find out where the nearest phone is. Report in. Tell them it's definitely a murder. No gun in the car. They'd better send out the murder and robbery squad.
The description and registration number of the murder car tallies with that of a car belonging to a man reported missing the previous night. Martin Kruger, age 39, height 5'11", weight 175, hair black, eyes blue. The dead man carries no identification, but he is 5'11", approximately 175 pounds, with black hair and blue eyes. When the murder and robbery squad detectives have completed their examination of the scene of the crime, the body of the murdered man is brought back to Johannesburg. The wife of Martin Kruger is contacted and brought to the government mortuary. When she sees the body, she breaks down. Later, she is questioned by the investigating officer in the case, Captain Rolf Duplessis.
Now, when did you last see your husband alive, Mrs. Kruger?
Yesterday. Yesterday evening. At about 6 o'clock, I think. Maybe a quarter past. I didn't notice the time particularly.
Where was this?
At home. We have a house in Hyde Park.
Do you know where he was going?
No. Martin just said he had some business to take care of. He never talked to me about that sort of thing.
What sort of business was he in?
Lots of things. Property, mining, jewelry. Well off, you see. Martin had mineral rights to a lot of land in Southwest. When they discovered diamonds up there, he sold the rights for a lot of money. He's been investing and speculating since then. He must have done well. We've never wanted for anything.
Where is your husband's office?
He doesn't have one. He's always conducted any business he had from the house. Then he'd meet people in hotels. Everything was very casual.
I see. So you don't know any of his business associates, then?
No, not really. You might speak to his lawyer, Solomon Stein. He'd probably know more about that sort of thing.
Yes, I'll do that. What about personal enemies? Do you know of anybody who might have wanted your husband killed?
No. No, Martin had a lot of friends, but no enemies. I don't know why anyone would have wanted to kill him.
Was he in the habit of carrying large sums of money with him?
Not that large, never more than a few hundred rand.
Well, people have been killed for a lot less than that, Mrs. Gruber.
I just don't understand it. I can't believe that Martin's dead. He was so happy yesterday.
Any special reason?
No, nothing special. He was nearly always like that. Friends with everyone. Generous. They all borrowed money from him, and he didn't expect to get it back. He was a wonderful man. So kind. So very kind. I'm sorry. Please, go on.
Apart from Mr. Stein, do you know of anybody else who might be able to help us in our inquiries? Any people with whom your husband associated in business? Any particularly good friends? Someone in whom he might have confided, perhaps?
Oh, I don't really know. Martin had so many friends. Oh, there's Johnny, of course. Johnny Argus. We'd known him for years. Martin might have talked to him about things he wouldn't tell me about. But I don't know.
Anyone else?
No, no one. No one special, really.
Why should this Johnny Argus be different?
Oh, I don't know. We often go out together. Martin and I and Johnny and a girlfriend. That is, we went out. Not anymore.
Where can I find Mr. Argus?
He works for some insurance company. And I'm not sure which one. He has a flat in Hillbrow, though, Burlington Mansions in Goldreich Street.
What number, Mrs. Kruger?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know. I've never been to his flat. I only know where it is because, well, we often picked him up there when we were going out.
I see. Well, we'll have a word with him this evening, then, and see if Mr. Stein can see us this afternoon. I think that'll be all for the moment, Mrs. Kruger. If you should think of anything that just might help us, you will get in touch with me. Anything at all, no matter how small it is.
Yes, of course. I want whoever did that to Martin. I want him caught and punished. Martin didn't deserve that kind of death. He didn't deserve it. And I want whoever did it to him to pay for it.
He will, Mrs. Kruger. Believe me, he will.
Friday, June the 8th, 3:20 p.m. Captain Duplessis telephones Solomon Stein, Kruger's attorney, and makes an appointment for that afternoon. Stein is a large, florid-faced man with penetrating gray eyes. He waves Captain Duplessis to a seat and leans back in his comfortable chair, tenting his fingers and raising an eloquent eyebrow.
You put me in a difficult position, Captain. Whatever goes on between an attorney and his client is privileged information. Yet I naturally wish to do everything I can to help bring my client's murder to justice. How can I help you?
It's probably the information that you would consider a privilege that's going to be of any use to us, Mr. Stein. Let's start with the straightforward things. Who benefits materially from your client's death?
Anita does. His wife. They have no children. She is his sole heiress, but I hardly think that's a motive for murder, Captain. Not in the circumstances.
What circumstances? I understood that Kruger was extremely well off. His wife talked about properties, mineral rights, investments, speculations. She says they've never wanted for anything. Just how extensive is the estate?
Yes, I suppose you will have to know about this. You'll find out about it sooner or later. The estate is practically non-existent.
What?
Martin Kruger was a gambler, a compulsive gambler. Made a great deal of money, invested it wisely, but he lived well, certainly at least up to his means. About 2 years ago, I'd say he was worth several hundred thousand. That was 2 years ago. Today, 2,000 or 3,000 at the most.
But that house of theirs in Hyde Park, that must be worth a lot of money. And his cars.
Mortgage to the hilt. The house, the cars aren't fully paid for. That leaves you with the furniture and so on. It doesn't add up to a great deal.
I see. Does Mrs. Kruger know about all this?
You'll have to ask her. I'm afraid I don't know.
You said Kruger was a compulsive gambler. In what way?
Recently, in every way possible. He can be found in any of those Hillbrow clubs before you people closed them down. The races, the bookmakers, Kruger would bet on anything. Recently, he's been plunging deep. Going down to Swaziland, taking more and more cash with him, selling up everything here, raising capital of every court and handing it over at the gambling tables down there. That last trip of his, about a month ago, dropped over 50,000 rand.
I didn't know people gambled for those kind of stakes. Can you think of anybody who'd want him killed?
No. No? No one. Kruger was a loser, not a winner. It's the winners that make enemies, the people he wins from, not Kruger. People liked him. He was easygoing, generous, thoughtful. So there you have it, a man who's lost everything, who doesn't have an estate to provide a motive for murder, and one who's extremely well-liked. Who would want to kill him?
That evening, Captain Duplessis goes to Hillbrow, turns into Goldreich Street, and finds Burlington Mansions without any difficulty. He checks the tenants' list in the foyer and finds the name J. Argus opposite number 1203. He takes the lift to the 20th floor and knocks on the door of a flat.
Good evening. Mr. Argus?
Yes, that's right.
I'm Captain Duplessis, police. I'm investigating the death of Martin Kruger. I'd like to ask you some questions.
Oh, well, better come in.
Yes, thank you.
I read about it in this evening's paper. I could hardly believe it. I've been trying to phone the house to talk to Anita. There's been no reply. I was going to drive round there tonight.
That wouldn't help. Mrs. Kruger is staying with friends for the time being.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes, I suppose she would, what with the shock and everything. What happened? Did he kill himself?
What makes you think he would?
Well, I don't know, really. The paper just said his body was found in his car out near Heidelberg, that he'd been shot. You read about that sort of thing often enough. People driving to a lonely place and killing themselves in their cars.
So you thought that might have happened to Kruger?
Yes, yes, I suppose I did.
Why should he have wanted to do that?
I don't know. Except he's been a bit worried lately. He's lost a lot of money gambling.
He told you about that?
He didn't have to. I've been with him to Swaziland a couple of times. I've seen the kind of money he's passed across the table. You'd never believe it, Captain.
Actually, I would. I heard all about the way he's been gambling recently, but I didn't know it had depressed him, not to the extent of wanting to commit suicide.
Well, you drop a few hundred thousand and see how you feel.
And Mrs. Kruger told me her husband was particularly happy just before he went out yesterday evening.
Oh, well, I wouldn't know about that.
You didn't see him at all?
Not yesterday, no. A couple of days before that.
Where were you last night, Mr. Argus?
Me? Well, what do you want to know that for?
A routine questioning. Of course, you're not obliged to tell me anything, but I thought if you had nothing to hide, you'd want to help us as much as possible.
Well, the thing is that I stayed in last night, came home straight after work, and I didn't go out at all. We had a pretty rough night the night before, you see. Well, I sort of wanted to recuperate.
Can anybody vouch for your having been here?
No, I don't think so. I didn't have any visitors. Went to bed early, about 8:30, 9 o'clock.
And between, say, 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock, what did you do?
Nothing much. Had a couple of beers, read the paper, listened to some music, had a bath, went to bed. I told you I had just messed around the flat, that's all.
I see. Mr. Argus, do you know of anyone who might have wanted Martin Kruger dead? Anyone at all?
No, nobody. Everyone liked Martin. He was a great guy. When you ask anybody, Captain, he was a mate to the whole world. Didn't have a single enemy.
He had one, Mr. Argus. The one who killed him.
Monday, June the 11th, 10:15 a.m. Captain Duplessis obtains a court order to examine the banking account of Martin Kruger. He goes straight to the office of the manager and shows him the court order. The manager sends for the account records.
I've been expecting something like this, Captain, ever since I read of Mr. Kruger's unfortunate death.
Why should you expect it, sir?
Well, you'll see for yourself in a minute. Kruger's account used to be fairly substantial, but in the past 2 years or so, he's drained just about everything out of it in large amounts.
Mr. Kruger's file, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Miss Verity.
The last entry was made on the 7th, sir. There's been nothing since then.
Thank you. That'll be all for the moment.
Very good, sir.
Here we are then, Captain. The is the complete file.
Thank you. Well, that young lady said the last entry was on the 7th, didn't she?
Yes, so she did. You'll find that on the top sheet, Captain. Why are you so surprised?
Yes, here we are. He drew out 3,000 rand, just about all he had. Left a balance of 38 rand in the account.
Quite correct. I told you the amounts were fairly large.
Well, I have to take these with me, I'm afraid.
Oh, dear. You will let us have them back, though.
Yes, of course. Now, what are all these stop orders here?
Oh, the monthly accounts, his insurance premiums. We pay directly to the companies concerned.
They must be very high policies. You don't pay out premiums like this for peanuts.
Well, no doubt, Captain, but I'm afraid I can't help you there. I have no information concerning them.
Well, thanks anyway. If you'll just let me have the names of the companies concerned, I'll find out everything from them.
Captain Duplessis ascertains that Martin Kruger had carried extremely heavy insurance and that the policies had only been taken out over the previous 3 months. He contacts Mrs. Kruger and learns that her husband had occasionally used a small wall safe at their home. She's not opened it since his death. He later picks her up and takes her to the house, opening the safe with a key on a ring found in the death car.
I hadn't thought of this until you asked me about it, Captain. Martin used it very seldom.
Ah. This is what I was hoping we'd find. The insurance policies. Didn't you know about them, Mrs. Kruger?
No, I'd no idea. Martin never mentioned them to me.
Take a look at this, Mrs. Kruger.
But this is for 50,000 rand.
And this one? And this. A total of 150,000.
But I don't understand. Why did he take out so much insurance? And why didn't he tell me?
I think I know the answers to that now. One thing, please, Mrs. Kruger. On the night that your husband was killed, you reported him as being missing. The report was logged at 11:55. Had you been trying to locate him before then?
Yes. Yes, of course. I telephoned everyone I knew. But none of them knew anything.
You phoned Mr. Argus?
Yes.
At what time?
Well, several times. First at about 7:15, I suppose.
But he wasn't there?
Not then, no. I got hold of him at about 8, I think. Or maybe a little later. Why, Captain?
There's a reason, Mrs. Kruger. A very good reason.
Six:12 p.m. Captain Duplessis, accompanied by Sergeant Nico Barnard, again knocks at the door of flat 1203 Burlington Mansions. Again, the door is opened by Johnny Argus. At the sight of the uniformed policeman, Argus's face goes pale.
Oh, it's you, Captain. Well, what can I do for you?
Some more questions, if you wouldn't mind. This is Sergeant Barnard.
How do you do?
Do, sir.
Well, come in, then.
Thank you.
I thought you'd asked all your questions.
Not all of them, no. You told me you were here in your flat from after work on the night of the 7th, Mr. Argus. I asked you if anybody could confirm it. You said no. You forgot about Mrs. Kruger, didn't you? She telephoned you.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course she did. I forgot about it, that's all. There you are. Now you know I was here.
Yes. We know you were here when she phoned, at 8 o'clock. And you weren't here when she phoned at 7:15. Where were you, Mr. Argus?
I don't understand. I was here.
Martin Kruger was killed at approximately 7 o'clock.
But I didn't do it.
Were you on the Heidelberg Road at that time?
No.
Someone might have seen you, recognized your car.
No, nobody.
Where is your car, Mr. Argus?
It's in the basement garage.
There were tire prints of a second car at the scene of the murder. Will they match your car's tires?
No, of course not.
I think they will, Mr. Argus. What did you do with the gun?
I didn't have a gun. I've never owned one.
You used Kruger's. He had a license for a .45. It's missing. And he was shot with a gun of that caliber.
But it wasn't me, it wasn't!
Where's the 3,000 rand, Mr. Argus?
What?
The money Kruger drew out of his banking account the day he was killed. The day he paid you to pull the trigger.
No, it's not true.
Are these your keys, Mr. Argus?
Yes, they're mine.
The car key, front door key.
Yes.
And this one?
I don't remember. It's an old key.
It doesn't look old. You know what it looks like to me, Mr. Argus. The key to a safe deposit box.
When we find the box, you know what I think we'll find in it? 3,000 rand. And the bank will have a record of your visiting the place on Thursday the 7th. I thought you were such a good friend of Kruger's.
I was.
Then why did you kill him?
Because I was his friend. He begged me to. He paid me, insisted I'd take the money. I didn't want to, but he made me take it.
So that his wife could get the insurance money?
Yes. If he'd killed himself, they wouldn't pay. But she knew nothing about it. You must believe me. She didn't know.
I believe you, Mr. Argus. Everyone who knew Martin Kruger said he was kind, generous. That was the only way he could think of to leave something to his wife. John Timothy Argus, I am arresting you for the murder of Martin Kruger.
John Argus made a full confession and led the police to where he'd thrown away the murder gun. It was recovered and used as evidence against him at his trial. In his summing up, the trial judge accepted that Kruger had paid Argus to shoot him, but stressed that this in no way excused the act of murder itself. Argus was found guilty and sentenced to death. And 2 months later, he died on the gallows at Pretoria Central.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of Squad Cars. Listen again next Friday evening to another authentic story in our dramatic South African police series, Squad Cars. Brought to you by General Motors, makers of the biggest and most exciting range of cars, trucks, and commercial vehicles in the world. Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Beaumont, Chevrolet, Opel, Holden, Vauxhall, Bedford, GMC, and Ranger, South Africa's own car.